The movie Blade Runner debuted in American theaters 25 years ago this week. A science fiction classic that transcended the genre, the film, based on a novel by Philip K. Dick, is considered to be one of the best, perhaps the best, science fiction film ever made. Blade Runner tells the story of a lawman named Deckard who specializes in killing genetically engineered humanoids called replicants created to labor on other planets. They have brief lifespans tightly controlled by their human masters, and several have escaped to Earth to find a way to extend their lives. That is a capital crime. In director Ridley Scott's vision of Los Angeles in the year 2019, Blade Runner is an allegory that combines several very contemporary themes. One of those is racism. On the media's Philip Martin pulls at that strand in the dystopic tapestry that is Blade Runner.
Not long into Blade Runner's opening scene, a fire-breathing tower set against a cold black sky, Rick Deckard is whisked off to police headquarters. In the original Warner Brothers release, we hear the voiceover of Deckard, ex-detective, ex-Blade Runner, who's forced out of retirement for one last time to kill replicants who've returned to Earth from a colonized planet. This version of the film left no room for ambiguity, as far as race was concerned. Here, Deckard, played by Harrison Ford, reluctantly meets with his ex-boss.
You wouldn't have come if I just asked you to. Sit down, pal.
I've got four skin jobs walking the streets.
Skin jobs? That's what Bryant called replicants. In history books, he's the kind of cop used to call black men niggers.
Since race is widely viewed as a social construct, then it can be easily reconstructed, at least in the movies. Hayden Guest used to direct Warner Brothers Film Archives and does the same job now for Harvard University.
The replicants are an extreme other. I mean, they're in fact an enslaved race, and they're quite literally being driven extinct. I mean, here being assassinated, being killed one by one by the Blade Runner.
When Blade Runner was released in 1982, the producers demanded that Deckard's inner thoughts be expressed through voiceovers, a device Ridley Scott eliminated in his director's cut. Race and racism were issues pressing hard against America's consciousness, but Scott believed those themes spoke for themselves in the set, action, and dialogue.
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.
In Blade Runner, the predominant other among the replicants was the so-called Nexus 6 model named Roy Batty, played by Dutch actor Rutger Hauer.
The irony is that the maker has sort of put a stamp on them, Nexus 6, you know, more human than human, at the same time that Harrison Ford's character, Deckard, seems to be rather poor in the human aspect. He's a slave in his own way.
It was no accident that the setting for Blade Runner was Los Angeles, which these days is a cauldron of ethnic clashes and cultural melding. In director Ridley Scott's vision of the future, L.A. is the literal crossroads of East and West, personified by Edward James Olmos's character, a Blade Runner named Gaff. He confronts Deckard, who's chowing down at one of the ubiquitous noodle stalls in this futurescape.
Lopa, nehojma, devaja Blade,
he say you Blade Runner.
Tell him I'm eating. That gibberish he talked was city speak, gutter talk, a mishmash of Japanese, Spanish, German, what have you. I didn't really need a translator. I knew the lingo every good cop did.
My character was 10 different cultures all in one.
We reached Edward James Olmos on his cell phone in Vancouver on the set of his TV series, Battlestar Galactica.
We got the Asian influence blended together, and the city speak became something that, you know, we've seen even today in 2007. We don't have to wait to 2019.
In terms of like how futurists make predictions, their vision of L.A. being overrun by the other was distinctly more Asian than the current paranoia.
L.A. writer Gary Dauphin says the current paranoias are focused on Mexico.
L.A. is a, you know, L.A. is a Chicano city, and I think that to the extent that downtown reflects that, it's different than what's depicted in the film.
What the film depicts is a future where Mexicans, blacks, and Asians do not bear the brunt of fear, hate, and suspicion, partly because there are no blacks and few Latinos in this dystopic vision of the future. The movie came out when Hollywood was in short supply of both. Instead, we see replicants, who, like the historical image of African Americans, are seen through the prism of untamed physical strength, entertainment, and sexuality. In fact, one of the replicants pursued by Deckard is a kind of sexual plaything. One is a dancer, one is a manual laborer. Harvard film archivist Hayden Guest.
So much is stressed on their physicality, you know, the actual bodies at the end, where, you know, they're doing physical stunts throughout the film, and so much is emphasis is placed on this. They're actually fighting for their lives. They express themselves predominantly through their bodies.
Why are you staring at this, Sebastian?
Because you're so different. You're so perfect.
Yes.
What generation are you?
Nexus 6.
Ah, I knew it. Because I do genetic design work for the Terrell Corporation. There's some of me in you. Show me something.
Like what?
Like anything.
We're no computers, Sebastian. We're physical.
In 1982, on sets throughout Hollywood, black actors were being cast as iron macho men, pimps, or as sex machines, as in Shaft or Superfly. At the other extreme, they were portrayed as utterly without sex or anger, but rather as secular saints. You find reflections of that kind of portrayal in the Matrix series and satirized in such films as Bruce Almighty and, more recently, Evan Almighty, where Morgan Freeman literally plays God. In Blade Runner, Roy Batty is a kind of god. He seems to fly. He is pierced and bloodied in a subtle allusion to stigmata. He transcends his agony and achieves grace. Rutger Hauer has co-authored a new book about his Blade Runner role, titled All Those Moments.
It's an investigation in humanity and life that we're not that familiar with, and in that way sort of, you know, expands your horizon. The story of Blade Runner is almost an excuse to revalue what humanity is about.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Ten Hauser Gate. All those moments will be lost. In time, like tears in rain. Time to die.
He dies, no longer a slave, a second-class human, defined by the manner of his creation or his genetic code. He is just a creature of his senses, a mortal man who would have liked to live a little longer. It is for Hollywood a profound and poetic statement about the inescapable brotherhood of man and the principal reason why Blade Runner endures. For On the Media, I'm Philip Martin.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, Mike Volo, and Nazanin Rafsanjani, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director, and Jennifer Munson, our engineer. We had help from Andrea Ambro and Madeline Ellish. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer, and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts, MP3 downloads, and our podcast at onthemedia.org, and email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
Bob Garfield will be back next week. I'm Chris Bannon.